Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hope Solo Speaks. Man, today I have a treat for you. Perhaps you haven't heard from this player in some time. She doesn't do too many interviews. She doesn't speak publicly very often. In my opinion, she should be doing so much more in our soccer community, but sometimes the love of the game remains in one's heart and not part of one's daily work. I am so excited because she is one of the best all-time players in history within the United States and worldwide. And now for the first time, we get to hear her thoughts on the 2022 World Cup. Anyone have any guesses? Please welcome the one and only Michelle Akers.
I'm so excited. Of course, one of the greatest goalkeepers in the world, right? Also, Northwest peeps, shout out.
Woo-hoo, Washington State natives, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like I said, a fan of your podcast and all the work you do. And of course, you're on a farm. So Hope, we got a lot in common there.
We do. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I know you better than I actually really do. And I think it's because of those common factors of being from Washington State, of being outdoorsy and getting our hands dirty, you know, on the daily. And really having like a healthy respect for nature and the farm life and animals. And so I feel like we're kindred spirits a lot. But I also have to bring you back to the day, or many days, I guess, where you actually helped train me at the University of Washington. Do you remember those days?
Yes, I do. I was just thinking about that with Gallimore and Amy and on the turf. It was on the turf.
Yep, in Dempsey. The indoor field at the University of Washington. And you happen to be really good friends with my college coaches. So again, that's something we have in common. And you were a staple on the women's national team at the time where I just was beginning to come on. And I got to train with the best goal scorer in the world. You were ripping shots at me from a young age. And I was like, you know what? Hell yeah. I'm training with the one and only Michelle Akers.
Well, it's so funny because Gallimore and Amy were like, hey, do us a favor and do some shooting on Hope because she needs to know what it's like to have some go in the back of the net. And I was like, I hope I'll score. Isn't that funny?
You even ran fitness with me.
Damn it, Hope. Damn it. I can't. It was obvious you were going to, you know, be a superstar.
Man, but you were a trooper because you were running fitness with me and you didn't have to do that. But you pushed me. It was awesome. I feel very, very blessed and lucky.
That's an honor. I mean, that fitness to me is like, that was one of my favorite things about national team was the fitness because it was so hard, but it's also like so bonding and also you're investing in each other. I ran next to Christine Lilly and we would always talk shit to each other before, like you're slow, I'm fast. And she would beat me on the turns and then I could catch her with my longer legs. But it's an investment into who we are and who we want to be. And it's freaking hard. So I loved that. And that's one of my favorite things more than being able to shoot on goal with you.
One of my first camps, there was a bunch of us in Florida and we had to partner up and run fitness. And you asked to be my partner, I think because you felt like, you know, you could take care of me, the Washington native. You trained me back in Seattle. And I partnered with you on one of the first fitness sessions that I had with the national team. And you cheered me on. You inspired. To this day, I can't believe it. It was so awesome. So
that's good.
Those were the good memories.
Yeah, good stories. Thanks for sharing that.
Of course. All right. So you honestly, you don't seem to talk about soccer that much anymore. I personally think it's time to get your story, your insight, your expertise to be more involved in the game. I'm waiting for your second book to come out. I hope you get that book one day.
Thanks. We will.
But you told me that you have a beautiful tradition of sharing the World Cup, especially with your son, Cody. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what the World Cup means to you and your family?
Okay. So I don't watch a lot of sports. We watch the Bills because Cody's a big fan and they're doing well this year. And we like the Buffalo logo. So we watch that. I watch some of the US games, the important games. Like I'm one of those people who watches only the finals and when it counts the most. Otherwise, I'm outside doing stuff. So the World Cup, every game counts. And I love watching the World Cup. And Cody doesn't watch sports either. And he doesn't even really like soccer, but this is something like we look forward to. And so the games are on throughout the day. And I don't really ever watch a whole game. I come in and out, except for the US and the finals. But so he and I, we sit there and we have the Spanish channel on. So we watch it in Spanish. I like the emotion of the broadcasters, and even though I don't speak Spanish. So anyway, that is part of it. And we always root for the US, of course, down to the final minute. And then we always pick a team that hasn't ever won or hasn't done necessarily well. And we root for that underdog. In a 1 year for us, it was Iceland. And so it's just there's something about it that's super special. And it's a celebration, right? And the crowd, the fans are amazing. Oh my gosh, Hope, the US game, when that stadium, they were cheering USA so loud, it was giving me goosebumps. It was giving me goosebumps. Like I was almost in tears because it was so, that was just so amazing. And then overwhelming, because, you know, I think about that being on the field, what that was like, to hear that USA, but then for our guys to be there, in that atmosphere and being celebrated in the hardest game of their life up till that moment is, pretty cool to watch.
Well, of course, it's very meaningful, you know, the atmosphere, like you said, and putting ourselves back in that moment and what it was like for us. But what did you actually think of how the men's team played in their huge tie versus Wales, of course?
Yes, the tie. I know it feels like a loss. Definitely feels like a loss. And not just to them, but I think to a lot, right? A lot of people. Our country. The guys haven't been in a World Cup for a while. I mean, it's eight years. It's a long time to be away from that standard, from that intensity. It's vital as a player and as a program, a team, a culture to be in that environment as often as possible. And so it showed that we haven't been. It exposed our lack of, but it also, to me, looking at the other side of it, showed that, wow, we haven't been in a World Cup in 8 years, and yet we did pretty well. Like it was a good opening game, I thought, for us. The first half, we showed potential, right? And then the second half, we fell apart and for lots of reasons, but for mostly, I think it was disappointing because you want to see your Americans win. I want to see the team do well, and I'm cheering for them, but at the same time, it's a building, we're building on something. And that's my perspective.
I think that's a good sense that a lot of people have, is that they're building. It's the first time where we actually feel like we're making the right moves forward. We're taking strides. We're increasing our potential to play at the biggest stages and to go into the next rounds. I thought this American side, it was the best soccer on the men's side that I have ever seen them play in a World Cup. Yeah. And of course, you know, like you said, there were lots of troubles in the second half. But one of the main things for me was Greg Berhalter. Everything changed with Welsh's one sub. They put a tall forward up front to try and break the line, and it worked. And Berhalter really didn't do anything to counteract that in terms of his tactics, which will be really important when they play England on Friday. England is, I think, have shown to be the best attacking team in the entire tournament, along with France. So really that tactical side, that falls on the manager, on the coach. Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, but with that being said, I think this team showed a lot of promise. They were aggressive. They didn't sit back. They dominated for long periods of the game. They're a young team. I thought they actually played a fast speed of play, which I haven't seen in a very long time. They weren't on their heels. And I really think that this is a group that our country can rally behind for the first time. You know, like you said, we haven't been in the World Cup for 8 years, and we're showing promise. There is some promise here. It feels different.
When I watch these other teams play, with the first half, yes, and agree, we had possession and we were aggressive up to a point, but I felt like we needed to be in the seams more quickly. Like if you want to watch the rest of the teams, there's always someone, 2-3 people for options. And for our guys, we were either late or just too spread out. And there was only one run to show. We were slow kind of facing up, but at the same time, you know, in order to play at that level, you have to be in that level. So, you know, when I was constantly looking at it and two views, screens was, but we're attacking, but we're in their half. And yes, they did play a low pressure game and, you know, inviting the U.S. to come in. But to watch, I think to watch us evolve into that and, the coaches' decisions. Yes, I saw there was a lot of feedback on his response to their sub. And he hasn't had World Cup experience, right?
Yeah, true.
I don't know. I agree also with everything you're saying. That playing against England, what a chance, because England.
No kidding.
So strong. And what is our response? This is my favorite part, is what is our response from the loss, which was, you know, a tie, but it was also a win for us. And how will we respond to that against a strong team like England?
Well, it could inspire the entire nation if they get this game right, which this potential is huge. And I hope they feel and embrace that pressure.
Exciting.
Exciting. But you know, our style of play has never been tiki-taka football. It's never been numbers around the ball. So you're not going to see that. Like you see, I just watched a little bit of the Japan-Germany game. I was on air, so I couldn't watch all of it. And it looked fantastic. So I can't wait to go back and watch that. But even with Japan, you see numbers all around the ball. And that's just never our style. And I don't quite understand why, because that's supposed to be the perfect style of play. That's the Spains of the world, the Italy's of the world, the Argentina's of the world, even though Argentina had a very poor showing, getting defeated by Saudi Arabia. That's unbelievable. So you say you pick your underdog team. Who's your underdog team of the tournament?
Yeah. So Cody and I haven't picked it yet. Cause we were talking about it, but it kind of has to be like a visceral thing, you know, to watch. And Croatia, I think, is one of those, because he was like, is Croatia in? Who is Croatia playing? And so we have to, I haven't watched them yet. So I'm excited. I've been out doing, horse chores, too many horse chores.
They will keep you busy.
Yeah. So I think though it might be Croatia. But that's still to be determined. So we will see. Okay. Our number one team is USA. Let's just say that.
Of course. I'm going for Portugal as well. I really want to see Cristiano Ronaldo just have a good World Cup. And he always does. He knows how to step up. He's a winner. I have so many questions to ask you, because you obviously know how to win games. You can put the team on your back. That was historically what you did. You're one of the, you were the face of the team when the women's national team first started. You were the very first face of the team. You played in 2 World Cups, I believe. You were
actually 3 World Cups I played in.
I thought so.
Yeah.
So, but the first one was 91.
Yeah, 91, okay. 95. I got injured in the first game and came back to play in the semifinal against Norway. We lost. We came in 3rd in that World Cup and then the 99 World Cup.
Of course. So you know what it takes to win a World Cup. Now, I want to know the perfect recipe in your opinion, because we just talked about Berhalter and his decision. So you have to have a good manager. You have to have a good coach. Sometimes you don't have to have a good coach. You know, sometimes the players get it done. So is it the stars of the team or is it the team environment and how well the team plays it? What is your perfect recipe to a winning World Cup team?
Well, I'm interested to hear yours too. So let's not forget, because I really am interested. So for me, I think it's a combination of things. And, you know, in 2019, when the women, they did poorly at the beginning. And I was like, oh my gosh, wait, was that? Yeah, that was it 2009. No, I can't remember which World Cup. They started off slow and then they won. They ended up winning.
That was in 2008 Olympics in China. We lost our opening match. It was kind of a mistake on my part. You know, I came out to punch the ball, hit my own. My defender was going up to win the ball too. We both get down on the ground. Ball goes in the net. She's concussed. She was one of our best defenders, Lori Kolepny.
Yeah.
And she's out for 2 games. It was horrible. And we lost our opening match and we went on to win it, like you said.
Yeah. So I think sometimes losing that opening match actually propels you into a higher level, like of intensity and focus, and mentality. So to answer your question, I think it's a combination of things. And I think it's a combination of results. I think it also who your team is at the core, the culture of that team, the core, you know, there is a culture of winning. There is a culture of belief that goes beyond the surrounding circumstances or opportunities. And so that, I think that base has to be there with the magic. So those 1 or 2 players that get, you know, push you over the top, can push the team over the top in those crucial moments, or who inspire the team when it's down by doing something amazing and on another level. In the end, though, I think it's the team culture. It's the group with the magic that creates the mentality to be the best in the world. So, you know, watching all the U.S. women's teams over the years, that's the common denominator to me. Is that mentality that one player who rises above, who like Abby Wambach, you know, one time against Brazil, I'll never forget. She's like, give me the ball. And Rapinoe finds her on her head. And like, who does that? That's a world champion. It comes from that World Cup, world champion, best on the planet mentality that is layered and layered and layered for years for World Cups. That's what we're excited about for our men's team and developing, right?
Well, that culture that you're talking about, that's embedded into the fabric of the U.S. women's national team, really started because of your era of players. I mean, it was drilled into us when we got on the team. I tell this story a lot, but it was a residency camp in 2000 or 1999, residency at Chula Vista. I think it was going into the 2000 Olympics residency camp. So we were having a scrimmage, and I happened to be on Mia Hamm's team at the time. I get the ball, I run up to the top of the box, and I punt it to her up front for a quick counterattack. But how quick can it be when you punt and the ball goes straight up? Nobody knew of a drop kick at that time. So yeah. I still think that she's going to trap the ball, try to control it. She stops in her tracks during the scrimmage, runs down to the end of the field and said, "You better learn how to fucking drop kick before you ever give a ball like that to me again." And I was in shock. This is Mia Hamm. I'm like, I think I'm 17 years old, you know, and I run up and I punt. And every day after that, I worked on my drop kick and I became one of the best distributors in the game because of her expectations of me. And you guys set that culture. There's a lot. You know, we can talk about other.
That's your response. Your response, though, was it could have been many different responses. It could have been, you know, F you, or it could have been like, you know, oh my gosh, you know, and then it's a drop in confidence and you're like done with that and you never punt again. Right. But you came in with that, that willingness to do whatever it took to be your best, which then makes us the team their best. And every single thing you do, and you know, Mia is a champion, right? And her actions are, you know, follow that. So, and you worked your ass off to be the best. So that, I don't know, to me, it the response of it is as important as the culture or the opportunity you step into. Hope, totally. My inspiration and the DNA that started this was that 1985 team, that first ever women's national team. And for me, it was Emily Pickering. She was our captain at the time. She played for UNC. She's just a badass, man. She was mean too. And, but a great, great leader, because she demanded everyone do their best. And she said it up front. She wasn't well liked a lot of times, but I loved her and that team, and there's many other players on that first team that set the standard and scared the shit out of me.
I'm glad I wasn't the only
one. Be my best. Yeah. Right.
I think that perfect recipe is really, a lot of it can't be coached though. It's yes, you create that culture, but you have to have that innately in you, that desire to win at any cost. Not every player has that. And, you know, as I played a couple more generations than you, it started to make me sad because people still want to compete and win, but they won't do whatever it takes. Meaning the level at training sessions would drop. Some people would say, "Hey, why do I have to play defense? It's just a training session. Why do I have to get in for this tackle? It's just a training session. Why do I have to go up and try and bump heads to clear this corner out? You know, I don't want to get hurt right now." So I really saw it start to curtail back. And I think that has to do with a lot of different things. It could be coaching. It could be the new era of player. It could be the mental health issues and people, you know, needing to take breaks. It could be the science behind training, you know, heart rate monitors and players not wanting to get up as high. So it is a whole different kind of culture now, but it still has that expectation to win at any cost. But it's peppered with players who don't have that innate desire. So for me, the perfect recipe is having the right amount of players with that innate desire to win. Along with selflessness, because I do think there's a lot of selfishness in a lot of players these days. And, you know, that's one thing people will say about me is I might have been an asshole on the field, meaning get your ass back on defense now, Megan Rapinoe. I don't care if you're mad at me for calling you out, but nobody will ever say that I wasn't there to help our team win. And nobody will ever say that I didn't make every player around me better. So I am very proud about that, even though I could have been looked at as an asshole too. We just wanted to win for our country.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, Carla Overbeck, right? She, she was one of the greatest captains, ever, greatest leaders, tough man. But I remember her, I was injured a lot and my job was Michelle Akers, get in the box, win every head ball, shoot to score, distribute the ball, play make, and now get back and mark that their toughest defender, win the punt off the goalkeeper, and then get back. So I was like half injured all the time. And so I remember one time, many times, Carl Overbeck would be like, "Hey, guys, get back here. We need you." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, Carl, you know, Carla needs me. Oh, and you know, and so you're right, that selflessness, but also that leadership, the demand, we need that from our players. And some players are, I think, more born for that. But I know I responded to that. I loved leaders like that, because they called you out in the moment, and it showed who you were in your response.
And you had a choice to rise to the occasion or not.
Totally did. I love those moments.
And I never, ever berated players for honest mistakes. It was those mistakes that were mental lapse in judgment, because I turned off mentally, or they just chose not to run back on defense or get in position. They're just being a little bit lazy. Those are the mistakes that I would really lay into. If it was a physical mistake, those happens in the game. They happen all the time. Yeah. What I say on this men's team, I don't see somebody that's cutthroat. You know, you were a box to box midfielder. You were hardworking. You were selfless, as we just talked about. You're great in the air. You were tough as shit. You got in for tackles. You had one of the best shots I have ever seen to this day. So when you actually watch the games and you watch this men's team, I don't really see somebody who's just wearing their heart on their sleeve, going in hard for tackles, winning every air ball, doing what it takes. But it is a different style of play, I guess. What is your favorite type of player? Would it be that hardworking midfielder, box to box player who does what it takes?
Yeah, I think for me, my favorites, it's those gritty players that do, like Julie Ertz. I loved watching her. I love those gritty players that are hard, that consistent. They are leaders, because they're leaders, but they're not the one who's out front. But they are in that. You know, that tight, there's like five or six players that usually the core there that run the team, from within. And they're one of those players that whose influence is mighty, their presence is mighty. And they sacrifice themselves and do whatever it takes, but they're not celebrated to the high degree of the goal scorers, perhaps, or the great saves by the goalkeepers, but so that is one of my favorite players. Christine Lilly was one. Well, she was my favorite
player. Who's your favorite player on the men's side?
So it's Pulisic. He kind of goes against that, what I just said.
He does,
but he doesn't, in the fact that he's, you know, playing, overseas and he is doing that grit, gutty work every single day, and not necessarily starting. You know, he wasn't mm-hmm. wasn't starting for a while. He had to earn his way. So he is that kind of player. But right now he has to transition into, you know, like the bigger leader on how do you orchestrate the team around your talent and knowledge and that mentality that you've become by playing in these other leagues that are, you know, head and shoulders above where we are right now in the States. So he never complains. He takes responsibility for mistakes. He celebrates when he does well. So he works his ass off. I love him as a player.
He can run for days. He is definitely the engine of the team. I don't see him being that physical prowess, you know, in terms of the type of midfielders that I would think that you would really enjoy and respect, or great in the air and things like that. But for me, I think the unsung hero on this U.S. team, and I hope, you know, obviously it's only been one game, but the captain, the youngest captain on this American side, Tyler Adams, has been superb in the midfield. You talk about selfless player. To me, that's Tyler Adams. And you know, there's so much great young talent. Obviously, Tim Weah getting that incredible goal, Weston McKennie. There is great talent on the U.S. team. But when you talk about overall great talent, you know, I think of somebody like Mbappe.
I mean, well, yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I just don't think we quite have a player.
Not yet.
That is, that you can compare to the likes of Lionel Messi and Ronaldo and Mbappe. Who's your favorite out of the top worldwide players? Are you a Messi fan?
I know I am. I so am.
How?
He's just classy. He's classy. He's consistent. Gets the job done. He's magical.
Does he get the job done for Argentina though? Does he step up in the biggest moments of the World Cup stage?
No,
that's what drives me crazy.
I'm still trying to figure out what happened there, but I love that they didn't win because this World Cup is it's always full of surprises. And to have that happen, I was like, oh my gosh, they're going to win. Because I love what it does for the team that beats an Argentina. So what's going to happen next for that team? Because their confidence has just risen. You know, a lot of times the confidence is what the separation of a win or a loss is, right? So I love Messi. How can you not?
Well, I don't love Messi, and I think I might be the only soccer person who doesn't. And it's because, you know, people who are cut from, you know, the cloth that we're cut from, we like winners. And I want players to show up at every level, at every stage, not just for club, but for country as well. And I'm waiting to be shown differently. And I think after losing to Saudi Arabia, this is a chance for the world to see what Messi is really made of. Yeah. So this is a huge opportunity for him. And I hope he does well. I really do. I don't cheer against him. I just always want to see more from him. Saudi Arabia pulled off one of the biggest shocks, World Cup shocks, ever. And they came from behind to beat Argentina 2-1. Messi did score. He converted a penalty kick. But you're right. This is why we love the beautiful game, is because any team can win. And I think that's what's incredible about the game that we love, is you got Lionel Messi and you got Argentina and you got the favorites of the World Cup and you have Saudi Arabia beating them on any given day. And that is why it is so hard to go forward and actually win a World Cup. You don't have a lot of room for error. Yes, we lost that first opening game in 2008. It made a difficult road for us, as it certainly will do with Argentina losing their first game, but it's possible. And I think this is why we love sports, is on any given day, any team can win, and America can beat England this Friday.
Yes, absolutely. I'm a full believer in that. And you got to show up. You got to play the game, right? You got to play. That's why you're so right. That's why it's so exciting, these World Cups, and having these matchups that you think are no-brainers, but they're not. Exciting.
So maybe Saudi Arabia can be your underdog team.
Maybe.
Actually, you know, and Canada, I'm so excited to see Canada play.
Oh, I am too. I know. Yes. I am too. Cody and I were talking about that too.
And you want to talk about a tactician, John Herdman, the manager for Canada, who came from the women's side. I knew him quite well on the women's side. We loved to hate him, but we also hated that we loved him, because he knew how to get in our heads. He knew how to get into our coaches' heads. He'd be on the sideline talking shit. He'd be managing the game. He'd be, you know, this incredible tactician and inspirational coach. Every player I've ever spoken to who's played for him, they love him. So I don't know if this guy is the magic of Canada or the hero of Canada, the man behind the scenes, or maybe he's the leader of the team, but he's not on the pitch. So anything can happen with this Canada team. And I find myself once again cheering for John Herdman.
Yeah. I mean, with him, with the Canadian women, he brought them to the level that, you know, they were beating us. So in the old days when I played, it was like, okay, we're playing Canada. We hated them because they were competitors. They beat the crap out of you on the field, but we knew we were going to win, and we just had to get through that initial to open up the doors of goals being scored. But no, he changed that mentality. He changed that for them, and they responded. And now he's with the men, and so it's going to be a great game, great story for them.
Oh, goodness, Michelle, it's so great to talk soccer with you. I've been a little sad that you're not more involved in the game, because you're one of the greatest players. You are, in my opinion, the greatest women's player, not even on the women's side. You're the greatest U.S. soccer player ever, you know, globally, world best as well. So you have such an incredible mind for the game. And obviously you had the talent, and you had the mentality And yet I don't feel like you're passing that on. Not that you have to, but I just feel sad for all those young players who don't get to see you in the game. I'm sad for myself that I don't get to see you in the game. Do you have any plans to get back involved? Are you training kids? What are you doing?
Oh, I'm not right now. Transitioning. I was, you know, I had the opportunity to get involved and I took it. And so now I'm transitioning into what is my next step? What's next for me? Is it being involved in soccer, or is it, you know, time to move on? I'm not quite sure. Honestly, though, I would love to be involved, and finding the right role for that, finding the team, not necessarily, you know, a side, but a group of people who have kind of a similar mentality and want to do something big, because it's, for me, it's bigger than just soccer. It's building into people's lives and empowering. I don't know, Hope, but thanks for saying. I've got to explore some options, and we'll see what happens.
Well, I think what's incredible, and I've always respected this about you as well, is that you kind of walked away from the game, and you didn't make it about yourself when the new generation of players came on. You had a passion outside of soccer, and obviously with your ranch and your horses, and you do incredible work. So I don't think everybody always has to go back into the game. And I think that's a beautiful thing, because we can maintain that love for soccer, keep it in our, you know, history a little bit, always bring up those beautiful memories, but not make it a daily work job where you tend not to like it. And like you said, it has to be perfect circumstances to get back into a good group of people. So maybe, just throwing this out here, maybe you and I should be starting our own NWSL team.
Wow. I'm going to think about that one.
Or some striker goalkeeper camps. I mean, there's a lot of directions we can go.
There is. And I'm going to think about that. I'm going to pick you up on that. But Hope, it's, you know, retiring. It's such a, Carly just retired. Ashlyn just retired. I mean, it's a big step. And yet for me, after 15 years on that team, which I loved every moment of it. I loved it. I didn't look back. You know, I didn't even have a soccer ball on my property ever, except for my dogs. You know, there was a flat one somewhere for them. And I was so excited to get into the horses and do that. And that's what I've been doing, you know, with the rescue work and so forth and the animals. And then I became a mom, which has been the best thing ever. But celebrating that team, I will always feel like, part of me is out there. And so I will always live and breathe that team. So when we do well, I want to celebrate everybody. And when we don't do well, I want to figure out a way to help us do well. You know, it's part of me out there. So, I love, connecting with, you know, our US players. And so that being on the podcast and reconnecting and talking about the things we have in common, but you know, one of the big things is our U.S. team. I mean, you helped build that team. You are one of the reasons we are so good, because of you, because of people, players like you. For me, it's important for us to stay connected and to share our legacy, that U.S. legacy, and also our individual talents and perspectives. So I'm so excited for you and everything you have going on, and happy to be a part of this great podcast.
Thank you so much. Well, I want to have you on again. I have so much to pick your brain about. I really hope that I can see you on a future episode. Do you have a nonprofit? Where can people help raise money for the horses?
It's Michelle Akers Horse Rescue, and it's a very creative name. And it's a 501c3, and I'm on the social media. I have a website, michelleakers.org. You can donate through PayPal or Venmo. All of that is on everywhere. And it's, I'll tell you what, the rescue stuff, I love it. Just the process of caring for the horses that I take in and the animals I take in and the day-to-day kind of relationship and connection that's built, especially when they come in and they're very, they're struggling and in poor condition. And so to build on that, who they are every day, and then watch them kind of, you know, come back to life. It's the best ever.
It is a beautiful thing. So you guys heard it. If you are an animal lover like I am, check out michelleakers.org or Michelle Akers Horse Rescue. Donate. Let's help rehabilitate these beautiful animals that just need some love and extra attention, because there is somebody who is passionate to bring them back to life. And she's sitting right here today at some of the most important work that she continues to do outside of soccer. She's not one dimensional, everybody. So please help out the one and only Michelle Akers. And before I let you go, Michelle, I just want to ask, how in the world is your body doing?
Oh my gosh. I'm freaking 56. Hope. And it is painful. It is painful. I'm saying, I've had over 30 surgeries just on one knee. And, you know, so over 30, how do you even count? You know, I had 25 of those during my career on the one knee.
Most people would be done after three knee surgeries.
I don't know if there's two ways you can look at it. Either I was incredibly dumb and stupid, or I was creative and brilliant. This right knee of mine, it was injured in the 95 World Cup in the first 2 minutes of the first game. And, you know, I blew up my PCL MCL. So there was no surgeries for that. So I just had to, I had some reconstructions and accept surgeries for that, but most of it was just rehabbing and staying strong. And I just played left footed a lot. I used my other foot. That's one of the reasons I got so good, is because I was injured all the time or often. And so I had to find different ways to contribute to my team and to stay on that field and make an impact. So anyway.
And you still had a rocket with that left foot.
Because I could only kick the balls, the ball a certain way, a certain surface of my foot. Because of those injuries. But now, oh my gosh, I'm looking at total knee soon, at too young of an age, and I'll probably need a shoulder reconstruction or a total shoulder soon from a fan who yanked
it. Crazy fan. That would not happen in this day and age with all security. Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be a bionic woman pretty soon.
Well, welcome to the club. I had my shoulder replaced at—
Did you?
How old was I? I was 30, probably 38 or 7. My husband had his knee replaced at 40. So I think you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I need to stop holding out and get busy on that.
It was the best decision of my life and Jeremy's as well. So maybe it will cut down on your day-to-day pain.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'll have to talk with you about that later on.
Awesome. Well, Michelle, gosh, it's such an honor. You know how much I love and respect you.
Mine.
Thank you.
It's mine, Hope.
Thank you for coming on Hope Solo Speak.
All right. Hey, happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. You too, Michelle.
Have a great one.
Hope Solo Speaks is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
SiriusXM Podcasts.